Good day to all of you listening to this recording. My name is Rob Christie. I have the privilege this morning of talking with my good friend Jim Hamilton. Jim has some exciting new ideas that he circumscribes under the title of Coherence and Flow, which I'd like very much for him to share with us this morning. Jim, take it away.
Well, good morning, Rob, and good morning, everyone out there and in there and around there and up there and down there and behind there and all of us. You know, we were just talking just before we started the recording about coherence, actually coherence and flow and sovereignty. And I have a lot of background and a lot of big backdrop in sovereignty, personal power. I'm not really traditionally associated with sovereignty and some of the political aspects. On the other hand, I am a 508 church. I am a reverend, and learning how to understand the law is a big chunk of what we're doing. But what we're talking about here in sovereignty, the truest sovereignty is about becoming intact in your connection with Source. And as you become intact in your connection with Source, when you become partnered with Source, blended with Source, you step into your truest nature, your truest possibilities, your truest potential. And ultimately, that's what sovereignty is that ultimate. Could you say your ultimate dependence on yourself, except it's not yourself, because your ultimate dependence on your inner nature, which is that governance and order that everything shares. And when you blend into that, then you step into your power, then you step into the truest sovereignty. Just
well,
for
let me,
beginning.
Let me stop you, Jim, just for a moment, if I may. So when you're talking about sovereignty, you're not talking about it this morning in a political sense, although you are involved in it in that sense in another way. And number two, tell the audience what you mean when you use the word source so they understand.
Well, I believe there's an order that everything shares. In fact, from a very young age, I always identified, to me early on, recognizing that the planets revolve around the sun, there's an order to that. Now, you can call it magnetism, you can call it gravity, you can call it a number of things, but those, you know, electricity and magnetism and gravity and these kinds of principles, underneath them is a commonality. You can't say gravity and magnetism are just out there and they float around and bang into each other. They all belong under a single auspice, assuming the word auspice works. And so loosely in the world, that's referred to as God. Now, the shortcoming of the term God in some respects is, like when I was younger, you know, God was kind of perceived as some guy in a beard and a rock, you know, two-legged, and with a beard and a rocking chair and, you know, sin and all this kind of stuff. And of course, that's really a child's version. But a lot of people still have. Anyway, the point is there's a single order that everything shares. And so I use the term source, innate intelligence, the divine. I use the term frequency of God. I use the term God. I use the term coherence, because coherence dissipates distortion. The frequency of God dissipates distortion. There's actually a single order. Now, you can be in resistance to that. And that's what the human species seems to be all about, because humans are out of sync with their bigger connection. They're out of sync with their potential. And we're actually rather destructive on the planet. So source is our the center of our very being, and we're part of that.
Let's go back to sovereignty and flow. because I interrupted your flow, if you will, in order to get clarity on what you meant by source. And
Sure.
you did that very well. So let's go back to those subjects.
Well, to repeat what I said, you might say, to become sovereign, first off, we're never on our own. I don't care what you think you know or what you think you believe, you are not on your own. And if nothing else, being on our own, if you will, we are constantly using tools. We are constantly using, if nothing else, we create shortcuts. We a jig is a tool that you use in carpentry and maybe other arenas where the jig allows you to, like in carpentry, to cut something to the same length each and every time, or to do a certain kind of a curve in a piece of wood, and the jig is like a pattern. And so humans use tools all the time. And the ultimate tool is a re-enabling of our natural state of connection with source, because somehow we're out of sync with that. And being out of sync with that, we're less than our optimum selves. So sovereignty, believe it or not, is about being ultimately individual. It's about using the highest quality tools so we can express ourselves at our very highest nature. And I don't think that we will ever be separate from this order that everything shares. And I'm a big believer in sovereignty. I'm a big believer in ascension. And in fact, it's in ascension. Let's see, how would I tie those together? Clearly, so what I believe is most people, well, ascension is available on this planet, and it's in your connection with source, for which you have no resistance, no division between you and source, where you become blended with source to the point that you've totally moved out of the concept of polarity, the linear, and ascension, which means you jump to another level, where you end up with a true identity, and that is a product of partnership with source at a very high level. And I believe there are dimensions far beyond this earthly realm, because this is a realm of polarity and duality that we can jump to. And actually, I believe the planet and its polarities allow us to jump to another level. But when we do that in this ascension process, for which we then have an identity, we're still blended with source. And that's the power, that's what empowers us, our connection with source, for which then ascension becomes evident and available. And then you head off on a very different journey, even more interesting than what we've got here.
I practiced Kashmiri Shaivite yoga very intensely for 8 years. And I can remember my guru talking about full God realization. That's the way she put it. And it sounds very much to me, listening to you this morning, Jim, that you're talking about the same thing she was.
And then you describe what does full God realization mean, or what's the interpretation of that? And first off, it's no mind at all. So full God realization isn't something you sit there and you go, oh, I got it. And maybe you strut around a little. Now I'm being facetious, but it's when you move. So my world, mind, time, and resistance are synonymous. And when you move out of mind, you move out of time and you move out of resistance. And when you move out of resistance and mind and time, the whole thing opens up. And God realization is found there, but it's not found by the mind. So while you can use the term God realization, it's not a realized thing from a mind perspective. So it's a little bit confusing, but particularly, let's say you spend a period of time in there. You can reflect on it from the reference of the mind, but it's actually a very poor tool, and you can't use the mind to get back to it. So, mind, time, and resistance, as they fade away, God realization becomes evident, but it's not delivered by the mind. And it can't be really cataloged or documented by the mind either. It's a place of no space, no time, for which actually most people think you just bliss out. But the fact of the matter is there is a whole nother octave of journeying and adventure. And I don't know about contrast. Couldn't be sure about that. But there's a whole gradient of existence. And in my world, the boundary of that is where full-time fun starts. So I spend most of my days in and my existence in fun. As a younger person, I've always been a little serious because I've always thought about bigger things, I've been involved in kind of sorting this out. But now everything is fun, and that's the bottom of self-realization, fun, full-time fun. And fun is actually where everything unfolds on its own at this in this gradient of joy and peace and expression. And at the same time, I want to say expressionless, because you're not driving the show. And in fact, most of the time, you best identify it when you look back and see the points that it allowed it to occur. So you can't be in this state and be in your mind and go, look at me, look how I'm doing. It doesn't really work that way. You got to step away for it to fly, for it to work.
Well, listening to you, Jim, I guess we're both practical Taurus guys. There's a road to follow to get there. And when I think back on my days seriously engaging in Kashmiri Shaivite yoga, we were taught certain practices, and the implication was we weren't the first. My guru was simply passing on to me what had been passed on to her. And to put the matter simply, if you follow these practices diligently over a period of time, you will make progress toward what she characterized as full God realization, which I think is very similar to what you're talking about. And it definitely was not something you figured out with your mind. And I will never forget, as long as I live, the day I met Jim Hamilton, because you shared something with me that just knocked my socks off, which was, I've been meditating for decades, Rob, and I've come up with some technologies, a track to run on, which will get you there quicker. Never forget that. One was the guidance light process, and the other was the process that you'd invented that was an offshoot of the technical stuff that you do.
Neurofeedback.
Neurofeedback. So do you want to divert at this time into either of those, or would you rather
So
take a different direction with the conversation?
I think we should go into those, but let me say first that I assume that the work you were doing, I don't, you referred to her as a guru, right? That was her kind of her title. She was a
Oh,
guru.
yes. Yeah.
Okay. I believe my point
And
is
part of a lineage.
right in a lineage. Right?
Her guru had passed the mantle to her, as
You know
someone
what?
else had passed the mantle to him.
I think what they're really teaching people is how to become mindless. Because the journey to God, if you will, is a mindless journey. And it's the ability to put this mind aside, that the whole thing opens up.
But you're definitely right, Jim. There was never anything about go figure this out. It was go meditate, go do these, I forget the name of the exercises offhand, what they were called. They weren't called exercises. They
Right.
were bodily positions, or go stare reverently at a picture of my guru.
Right.
Whatever. None of it was mind-based.
So, what comes to mind, I'm working with a group right now, and I'm kind of watching this whole thing. And one of the things there's a regard for is Joe Dispenza. And the point I'm getting at is I've never done any of his meditations. I know people that have gone to his events that they would call them exhausting, and they go home and take a week to kind of reorient and kind of get back to life. And I think what he does is a massive mind alteration. I understand that he does a meditation, and in fact, I've heard it, where he uses a very odd voice. Almost like a, well, I can't really say because I've really not done it to any great degree, even though I will be sitting in on one of his meditations soon for a particular reason. But I think what he's doing is throwing people out of their mind, throwing people off, throwing them out of their mind. And the gyrations of the meditation, the affirmations of the meditation are matched up to throw you out of your mind and at the same time feed you a certain type of affirmation. I believe that's what he's doing. And I can't say that for sure, and I probably have no right to speak about it because I haven't. Well, I did buy one of his seminars that was pretty new, and so I guess I have been through some of his material. But so the point becomes, I believe, that there's different kinds of exercises you can do to put you out of your mind. And when you move out of your mind, you become God realized, because it's actually as simple as that. Now, when you meditate for a few moments, and it says 20 minutes or let's say an hour, you move out of your mind. And at the very simplest, that's called pleasure. When you meditate and become empty, and you disappear, and when you come back, and it's not like you went anywhere, because that's not what we're doing. But when you meditate and have learned how to become empty when you meditate, that is pleasurable. And if I remember, I said the bottom rung of the high end of consciousness is fun. So how different fun is from meditating and pleasure, I'm not sure. But there, it's so the fun part of meditation, or listen to that. But anyway, the fun part of meditation is it's enjoyable because we move out of our mind. So what I want to touch on, there's something called dynamic meditation. It was introduced to the world by Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. I don't know when. I remember doing it in around 1980. In small groups of us, I was part of something called the Today Church. Bud Mosier and Carmen Mosier. And they ended up taking over a Methodist church in renting the property, or maybe part of the property. I don't know how that worked. And we had a basement area where we would go down and do dynamic meditation, and we would be in the dark, and there'd be, let's say, 15 of us, and it would be in the dark, and there'd be a sound system, and it would be a bunch of drumming. And kind of some, there would be four or five components. And one of the components I remember is you settled into listening. So we'd be standing, and then we'd be doing what were called who breaths. And we would kind of jump up and down, and we just go, who. And we do it in our own order. And then we'd jump to something else because the command in the sound system and the person that was delivering this dynamic meditation had instructions, and we'd go through about four or five phases, and all of a sudden there'd be a stop. I mean, a command to stop. And what would happen is we would suddenly stop what we're doing. We might have sweat running down our face a little bit, and we would be mindless for very short periods because the idea of dynamic meditation was to throw the mind off. And God was right there. How long did it last? 3 or 4 minutes, maybe? And we're talking about the same thing. So, of course, what my work ultimately is about you talked about guidance light, the hair stands up on my arms. Core resonance is a fancier version of the same thing, more of a full-blown. Because when you move out of the mind, so 3 or 4 minutes, not too much happens except for there's a realization. You realize something's quite different. But when you learn how to do it for extended periods, you realize that you're naturally met with guidance. And I've identified two kinds of guidance. And maybe we can go into that next.
A point that I think is important that I don't want to lose, and it's not something you and I have talked about before, but you were talking about Joe Dispenza, who a lot of people think the world of. After one of his, after going to one of his events, I don't know whether he does them online now or in person, it doesn't really matter. The people go home and like I think you said take a week to recover or words to that effect. And what came up for me listening to that was if you jump into the pool of getting closer to God, getting closer to guidance. I don't want to say it's a risk because it's just part of the process, but the word risk comes up, and that is in the process, you may encounter resistance. And that resistance may be massive. I've had that experience in my life recently, around money, of all things. As I attempt to let go of selling my time by the hour and moving into being the author of a book and maybe a coach, I'm encountering massive resistance. And it feels like the same thing that I suspect Joe Dispenza's clients are encountering. And I think one of the merry, ver one of the many merits of the guidance light process is that it moves you in the direction of coherence without engaging massive resistance. And that's an incredible blessing that, I think is maybe only understood by you and me.
Well, a couple of things. One, I claim to have spent lots of time in presence. And I think once you understand what the end result looks like, you have a better sense of designing tools, or tools become evident that become useful. So that's one quick remark. Another is I believe that, and I'm not picking on Joe Dispenza, and I even like that he charges lots of money because he gets a higher quality crowd. I believe he's teaching pretty elementary stuff, basically, myself. But I believe that in his, the reason people can be exhausted at these things and having to kind of recover and settle back into their world is because it's forced. So
There you
you talk
go.
about resistance, but it's forced. It's forced open by crowd environments and stuff like that. I'm not making that wrong because people do it and they like it and they do what they want. But it's forced. And I remember one of the first times I was in presence. I was living in LA, and I offhand that would have been maybe 2011. I don't know if it was an earlier time. And I remember I was in presence for about 3 weeks, and it was a rip. It was, when I say work, I don't know how else to explain it. I remember being on the freeway and realizing I was in a state of flow at 80 miles an hour with everybody else. And it was like one of the first times it happened. And it was a bit taxing on the system. And it wasn't that I was driving it, but it happened. And I realized somehow that I could hold it open. And it was kind of exhausting. And now the third remark is you're bumping over to a new a mechanism for being on the planet and earning money and this and that. And what you're up against is your existing patterns and habits. So all of this is related. So your patterns and habits are set. Your entire life is set by your patterns and habits. Your patterns and habits are what produces your momentum. And so it's the revising of your patterns and habits that revise your momentum, which revise your outcomes. So, in the Joe Dispenza event, and I wish, I've not been to one live. I have clients who've done these things and they've stopped going to them. There's a wear and tear and a reorientation. And I wonder how many people that become healed in these events stay healed when they move back, when they go back home, and their mind goes back to wondering what happened. I'm not picking on a deal because the extravaganza that he offers is really valuable because this is what we're doing. We're out there learning how to express and expand and extend, and we play with all these different means of doing it. So, and we all do things that are a match for us. So, and we grow and then we try other things and on and on. And I say kudos to Joe Dispenza because he has big crowds. He charges a lot. He gets a certain quality of people, and those certain quality of people pay a lot of money. So that means they're paying attention. And it means he has their attention. So he's delivering what he wants to deliver to them. And a lot of people are very pleased. So there we are. It's good.
A big hello to everyone listening to this recording. My name is Rob Christie. I have the privilege of being with my friend Jim Hamilton. If you're listening, I presume you share my interest in personal growth and transformation, or put more simply, you're simply looking for ways to improve your life and improve your results. In order to do that, everybody needs a track to run on. You know, what do I do Monday morning in order to improve my life and improve my results? Jim has not one, but two technologies that he has invented that have been proven over time with a number of his clients to produce results in the real world. And in my book, that's precious. There are numerous people out there today offering the kinds of solutions I'm talking about that you can engage in with great sincerity. And at the end of the day, you're still scratching your head and wondering why you didn't get the results you hoped for. Well, speaking from personal experience, I can vouch for one of Jim's programs. I'm eager to do the other one someday. Jim, take it away to tell us about these programs.
Well, Rob, again, great to spend time with you, and I'm happy to have people listening in after the fact. They can be driving 80 miles an hour on the freeway or walking in the park or whatever, and tune in to what we're talking about. So what we were last talking about was patterns and habits. And patterns and habits automate our lives. And the reason they automate our lives is because, as I scratch my head, that's so funny. Because somehow we're out of our natural state of connection with source, the natural state of guidance that the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and the rocks, even everything in the natural world kingdoms. Plant, animal, mineral, because even the mineral kingdom is plugged into source. That's not just brown under the grass. There's all kinds of minerals and different kinds of rocks and different kinds of structure. And even quartz, we know, grows when it breaks, it continues to grow and grow new points. So there's order everywhere. But the humans are out of sync with that. And that's why we're so dysfunctional. Clearly, we're dysfunctional as a species. We've got plastic and everything now. But what the point is that being out of our natural state of connection with source means we don't have our natural access to guidance, which is a crucial component of flow and prosperity and everything else. And so that means that because we don't have access to guidance like we should, the brain has to manually process the whole world. And it wasn't designed for that. If you think about it, your eyes have a 1-inch pathway to the brain, and your eyes sense out and they receive back. Your ears have a 1-inch pathway to the brain. They sense out here, like I can be talking to you, and I can sense out with my ears even while I'm talking to you and highlight what I believe I can hear to my right. And so my point is the brain's function, I believe, is to process sensory information. And when we don't have access to guidance, the brain is forced to do it all. Figure out what high school we're going to go to, who we're going to marry, what we're going to be for, our life on planet Earth, and sort all that out manually. And because the brain is in overload trying to do everything, what it does is settle into patterns and habits as quickly as it can. An example would be you move to a new home. And one of the first things you're going to learn is so many things first, besides where the ATM is and where the laundry, the dry cleaner is, and where you buy your gas and where the cheapest gas is or the gas station you like the most. You settle into those patterns and habits. But in your home, one of your first patterns and habits is known when you walk into the bathroom at night, which side of the wall the light switch is on. Well, I personally like rope lighting and real low lighting. My lighting stays on all night. It's real low, and you wake up and. But anyway, the point is that we settle into patterns and habits as quickly as we can to take a load off the brain, because otherwise it's manually processing things and it's in overload man, so it settles into patterns and habits. I've forgotten our question. What is our question?
Well, we're delving into your two technologies, Jim.
Ah.
People need that track to run on, and you've got them.
Okay. So what we have is a situation where we've all settled into patterns and habits. Our lives have become automated, and we don't get much more than what we projected based on our patterns and habits. And again, the brain will settle into patterns and habits as quickly as it can. We don't even choose our patterns and habits, because you can choose them such that they can be ever spiraling upward. And self-healing is a term I use, where the patterns and habits can continue to refine themselves so that your resources, your brain resources, are available. And so what I do, in kind of understanding that idea, that changing our patterns and habits is kind of a process that is not meant to be forced. I think it's meant to be kind of massaged, you might say, or it's meant to be a friendly transition because, first off, brain's doing the best it can. And I promise you, brain's on overload. We know, but try introducing a new idea to somebody. Everybody is topped out. Their ability to take on something new is practically zero. So if I were to say that I know what the end result looks like, I now can go backwards and develop tools, I believe, that will allow people to access the kind of things I've discovered with a, I say, a minimum muss and fuss. The simplest one and the most more recent one is called Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity and Guidance Light. And for just the tiniest bit of history, I had a 40-foot sailboat, but I was retired by the time I was 30 with a 40-foot sailboat. And I actually put the deposit on that boat in the last 3 months of being 25. I bought the boat in Hampton, Virginia. $50,000 is a lot of money back then. And that's a that was a product of goal setting. Goal setting and harnessing the subconscious mind in meditation. And so bear having barely got out of high school, I mean barely, my English teacher looked at my grades, said fail, and this guy isn't going to help. I never did figure out who Beowulf was, but anyway, I wasn't getting along with my dad my senior year. Well, so I have a massive background in affirmations, and that's how I got ahead early. And so I've come back to that basic concept of the power of affirmations because what you focus on expands. And most of us, and I say most of us, our minds are a skelter and a skelter and a scattered. I just made that up. A skeltered and a scattered. And what that means is our broadcast is all over the place. We're in overload. We're in a lot of reaction. We're in a lot of resistance. Now, our patterns and habits, and some of us build better patterns and habits, and we get through life much more in a much more refined manner than others. And high sensitivity people have even more information coming in, so more overload. And but the point becomes is that Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity and Guidance Light is a product of saturating the mind with a single type of affirmation, not a single affirmation, but a single type of affirmation about our connection with Source. Because I suppose if you don't agree that Source comes first, this wouldn't make much sense, but the fact of the matter is we're awash in a world of order that we're out of sync with, and and Source is what that is, however you want to call it, God, innate intelligence, on and on. And so what we want to do is we want to clean up our broadcast so that we become singular in our outpouring. We want to become singular. You could focus is kind of strong. But singular in our broadcast, singular in our prayer, singular in our affirmation, so that our broadcast becomes singular and it becomes clear about our connection with Source. And so again, what you focus on expands. And what I've and I developed this program, the first time I used it was 2004, 2005. I then it's 100 days. And I then used it in 2008, then 2011, then 2016, and then again in 2022. And it's astounding what it can achieve because we learn how to manage our broadcast instead of having a helter-skelter broadcast out of us into the cosmos. We've become clear in wanting to align with the frequency of God, for which then things open up. And guy, it's called Guidance Light because it's technically it's a mind-based program. Now we've caused the mind to be singular in its focus, but it's still mind-based. And my world says the mind is not that fancy of a tool to, from the get-go. We're better.
Jim, I want to interrupt just very briefly here,
Sure.
so that you can share with the audience that this is not a religious matter. You are not asking people to change religious beliefs. You are asking them to engage in a process which gets them closer to a vibration which is more supportive.
Absolutely. This has nothing to do with religion, nothing to do with belief systems in that manner at all. This is actually a mechanical understanding of how things work, how the body works, how the mind works, how our connection with source works, how it becomes enabled. And it's even more, it's more mechanical. More a mechanical understanding than even a spiritual understanding. This mechanical understanding that I'm talking about then is where the spiritual world, the spiritual exploration then extends from. So this is a mechanical understanding, and then your church thing and all of that, which we've always been seekers. We've always been seekers for, I call it personal performance. And our connection with source is the foundation of that. And so, yeah, we're not, this is not a religious thing at all. Now it's true. I do 508 churches and this and that, but that's more of a, I don't want to say political, but it's not traditional religion. What's, it's not religious, but it's not traditional church at all. It's a whole lot. It's a legal understanding. It's a legal foundation for moving forward as human beings, but that's a different, that's another day. So I think where I was that we can use the mind to be to cause it to become singular in our broadcast. And as we call in what we're asking for, what I call guidance light becomes evident and available. And guidance light will deliver things that the mind on its own cannot do at all. Because when you plug into what soaring affirmations can produce, it will deliver things that you would otherwise not be available. And so we're, I think I talk about low Earth orbit. Guidance light can deliver you to low Earth orbit where core resonance, which is a full-blown type of guidance, can deliver you to Mars. I'm kind of using Elon Musk ideas a tiny bit, but so low Earth orbit is far more than most can access. And it's a very gentle expression. It comes at its own rate and speed, except that you can see it. You can start identifying it inside of a couple of weeks. And part of what we do is identify what we discover as we go along. And so in identifying what we discover as we go along, those are kind of affirmations on their own. So we continue to grow this idea of plugging into newfound synchronicity, harmony, and order, and flow, and guidance, and abundance.
I'd like to share with the audience, as a person going through the Soaring Affirmations program, that it basically is comprised of two elements. The first element is you are saying a series of time-proven affirmations, which, if you do this diligently, will bring you closer to the frequency of God. And the last part of the exercise is a meditation to get in touch with whatever has come up for you during the process. In summary, it isn't difficult. It isn't threatening. It can be done in a half hour less. The only difficult part of the process is committing to doing it. Back to you, Jim.
The discipline of meditation is half of what meditation's about. If you don't do it regularly, meditation doesn't achieve its potential. Of course, any kind of just meditating once, that's pretty, fleeting. But the discipline of doing something is actually huge to the mind, because otherwise the mind's running on its own, attempted to protect a brain on overload and run the whole show and filter out incoming information because the brain's on overload and on and on. So The fun part of soaring affirmations, and I developed this a long time ago, and it started with, I remember I had a breakup with a girlfriend that was really kind of hard. This would have been in, let's see, probably beginning of 1998. And I was actually 2 years getting over that. It was kind of a tough deal. When I'm in love now, it's different. It's a lot lighter, and the relationship can come apart, and I'll still have the same feeling for the person. So I've kind of, love doesn't have to hurt loving somebody. But the point is, I went into what ended up becoming 2 years of journaling. And after that journaling, then I wrote Visionaries Thrive in All Times. So Visionaries Thrive in All Times, that it took on the third try, which was April 19th. I believe that I still don't remember. I still have trouble remembering 2000 or 2001. But the journaling, I learned right off the bat when I journaled, it came to me, "Good morning, Jim. We are pleased to speak with you." And it wasn't so much that I was channeling, but in my journaling, I gave myself latitude to range around and to, instead of being humdrum, just, one foot in front of the other journaling, I gave myself latitude to be free to talk to myself like a third party, like I had insight that I included in the journaling, like a more intelligent part of me was participating in the journaling. And that ended up being really an astounding period of time. Thank God only there were two yellow pads, legal pads, whatever, that were handwritten, and the rest of it then went to the computer. So thank God most of it's readable, but there's some extraordinary info in there. I've never done anything with that. But the soaring affirmation comes from that idea. Good morning, Jim. We are pleased to speak with you, because the soaring affirmation is part of it, is where you take, not the monotony, not the humdrum. You take the linearity of the affirmations that we're working with, and we turn it into a soaring component. We add the we part to it, and we allow the affirmation to rise, and I call it a soaring affirmation. And it gives us a freedom to envision out in front of us what we're looking for and what we'd like to have and what it feels like. And that's what the soaring part's about. It's very, very, very effective, and again, comes out of my own work. And I'm happy you're doing it. Happy you're doing it.
Well, let's suppose someone listening to us this morning is intrigued, as I sincerely hope they would be, and would like to get started with soaring affirmations. Go through the next steps for them, if you would, Jim.
Okay. Well, first off, it's something you can sign up for yourself. You go to my website, coreresonance.com, core, CORE, which, by the way, core is coherence and resonance. So core resonance, RESONANCE.com. And let's see, how do you find it? So I guess it'd be coreresonance.com/ soaring affirmations with a hyphen. And I believe the other way to get to it is www.soaringaffirmations.com. So in other words, that would forward to coreresonance.com/ soaring hyphen affirmations. And when you get into that page, it's an introductory page, and then you move into how you make the payment and that kind of thing. And in the payment, it's $500 or $600. It's $500 if you pay for it in one payment. It's $600 if you do it in three payments, and it has 100% money back guarantee. But you have to do the lessons. I forget what the number of lessons is within 30 days. I don't know if it's 15 or 20, but if you do the lessons and you don't get results, I'll refund your money. But the game is to do the lessons and let it saturate into your system, for which you'll start identifying newfound synchronicity, harmony, and order pretty quickly.
Well, I would add there, Jim's recommendation is to do this 100 times. And if you think about it, that's just a shade over 3 months, which is not a long time in the great scheme of things. But more good news, you don't have to wait to get to 100. People who have done this program, including yours truly, start to get results long before they reach the 100 repetition stage. One more question, Jim, before we move off this topic. Let's suppose that we have an audience member out there this morning who's 76 years old and not particularly well versed in the use of computers and technology. Could they contact you directly and have you help them set this up so that they can get started right away?
Absolutely. One of the things that's so much fun to me is I like talking to people. I think that's the reason I do all of this. The truth is, I look for conversations. And if there's anybody interested in anything I do or anything, even people that have doubts or even disagree, happy to talk with them and explore these ideas. So one of the ways you can do is you can sign up for it direct, or you can contact me. In fact, we can do a half hour Zoom call. You just go into the top of my website. You can find contact info and set up a calendar to do a Zoom call with me, and that would be a great way to go. So that's a good point.
Specifically, how do they do that?
At the top of the website, there's a place for contact. And they click on that button, and or coreresonance.com/contact, and that would open up a web page that would and I'll put that up when I edit this. I'll put those links in the video. But let me make a remark real quick. Repetitious. Now, first off, we're doing 10 different affirmations over a period of 10 days, and then we're repeating them. So we're not doing the same affirmation every day for 100 days at all. It's a series of 10 that rotate. Part of the process is a same affirmation, and then part of it rotates over a period of 10 days and then repeats. So it's not as monotonous as it might sound, repeating the same thing for 100 days at all. You see, there's an inner work. There's an introspective component that we have to be willing to do. And it's not like the soaring affirmations is drudgery, because actually it's very enlivening to be with yourself doing something that's associated with your connection with source, for which you start seeing little chunks of evidence. Some people see almost immediately, within a few days, they start seeing little things. Because as they start doing this project that is repetitious, they're starting to influence their patterns and habits already, for which they're starting to see waivers in their existing realities, because the realities are a product of their patterns and habits. And as we start to establish new patterns and habits, you're going to start to see shifts in your reality creating. And by the way, that's part of what we document in this process.
I'd like to send sincerest good wishes and a welcome to anyone listening to this recording. My name is Rob Christie. I have the joy and the privilege of being with my friend Jim Hamilton this morning. I assume if you're listening to this that you have an interest in personal growth and transformation, as I do, or put more simply, improving your life, improving your results. To do that, you need a track to run on. And one of the many reasons that I hold Jim dearly is he's come up with two different technologies that have proven over time to enable people to actually do that. And the second of those flowed out of his interest in and engagement with neurofeedback. So, Jim, take it away. Share with our audience the technology that you came up with that can support people in improving their results and improving their lives.
All right, Rob. So again, always a pleasure to speak with you and have the audience listening in at their levels of interest and curiosity. And they can always, of course, be in touch with me at coreresonance.com or Visionaries Lab, VisionariesLab, visionarieslab.com. I've worked with three physicists. The second physicist introduced me to neurofeedback. And I had not finished Visionaries Thrive in All Times by more than about 8 or 9 months when he and I met. And
Brief interruption. You're referring to one of your books, right?
Visionaries Thrive in All Times is the first of five. Yes. And actually, I have something called the Shortcuts Through Life series, and that's all five books bundled together. And get them in an audio or ebook or what else is there? Audio, ebook. I don't know. I guess that's it. Anyway, I met a gentleman, and it's kind of like when we met, it was kind of really synchronistic. It's kind of like we fell in love with each other, kind of like, I want to work for you, Will. And then he's going, I want you to work for me, kind of thing. And so what I ended up doing was pioneering his company. It was actually being revamped from its original title. So he was revamping. I showed up. Actually sold exactly $1 million of neurofeedback for him in 14 months. And I'll go so far as to identify that based on two ideas in Visionaries Thrive in All Times. One, if you want to be more than what you are, you need to partner with something bigger than yourself and your buddies. And like the Navy SEALs might partner with the federal government, you might say, I believe if you want to be ultimately successful, you want to partner with God or the frequency of God or core, pardon me, source or innate intelligence. And the second idea is that your connection with source and innate intelligence is a product of your nervous system. And so quieting the nervous system, which meditation will do, but what I ended up discovering was that you could use neurofeedback to quiet the nervous system much more quickly, because the part of the nervous system that needs to be quieted is the brain. And we've already touched on the idea that the brain's on overload, attempting to process the entire world on its own, when in fact, in our natural state of connection with source, guidance is naturally available. And because it's not, we're all in overload. So what I've learned how to do, the long story short, is I've learned how to let the brain find itself through the hardware software and let the brain reorganize itself and do it itself. Because most neurofeedback begins with what's called a brain map. And then somebody interprets the brain map, and then somebody decides what your brain should look like. And they do protocols or exercises to push the frequencies of the brain around to balance it based on what they think it should look like. And this particular guy, since I haven't named the company and this and that, he had two restraining orders against him. So he was kind of a He was a genius, but he was probably not the healthiest person in the world to be deciding what your brain should look like. He was really a data guy, really. In fact, he really only cared about data, and that's why I left the organization. And then I wrote Core Resonance, my second book. But the point is, I was introduced to neurofeedback. I now have about 400 sessions, most of it with my own gear, having learned again how to let the brain discover itself through the hardware software. And what I discovered is that is you use core resonance as we quiet the brain, because see, I see our nervous system like a living antenna system. Think of your nervous system like in a drawing. It's all these little tendrils of nerves and neurons and this and that, and see it like a living antenna system, because the neurons are made out of microtubules, and microtubules is what source talks to in each cell. All cells have microtubules. Anything living has cells, has microtubules, but neurons have far more microtubules. And to take it a half step further, in my first 10 years of meditation, I discovered that in becoming quiet, I realized the nervous system, as my mind quieted down, that I realized the nervous system is always listening. I began to see that the nervous system senses out and receives back. Anyway, I discovered using neurofeedback to quiet the brain, which quieted the nervous system. And as the brain quieted down, our natural state of connection with source naturally became evident and naturally became available. And better than that, the mind would subside to this connection. And so that's the difference between guidance and light, because we're using the mind to build and broadcast our connection with source and refine our connection with source. And with core resonance, we're putting the mind will relate to this connection, because otherwise the mind's function, I believe, is as a guard dog for the brain on overload. I don't believe the mind is
I
kind
want
of.
to interject something here very briefly, Jim, and that is I want the audience to be crystal clear that this technology is not Jim Hamilton programming your brain. It is Jim Hamilton providing you with a technology that allows you to discover some things about yourself and then make decisions about, what to do with that information. There isn't any programming going on here.
You know, Rob, that's precisely true. So many things you do are programming. I mean, you could have these dark glasses where you got the diodes going off or the little blinking lights, and that's all programming. There's so many things. Crystal bowls are programming. I'm not going to tell you they're bad or they're wrong, but you don't, if you really knew what the frequencies were doing to your nervous system, maybe you'd do them, maybe you wouldn't. But it's a phenomenon, so that's programming, yeah. And core resonance, there's no programming in this work, because what we instead do in quieting the nervous system, our natural state of connection with source becomes enabled. And as that becomes enabled, the mind will subside to that connection. There's no instructions from us on anything. This is a naturally occurring scenario. And as the mind subsides, which is the thing we're after, whether you're meditating or doing ayahuasca or plant medicines, whatever, as the mind subsides, the connection becomes even more enabled. And as this connection becomes enabled, guidance naturally shows up. And that's what I don't have a better term for it than calling it full-blown guidance. And in full-blown guidance, that's why core resonance can deliver you to ascension, because as we move out of the mind and become blended with source, the whole thing really opens up. And a lifetime of this would produce a result that will last, I say, the rest of your life, the rest of your next type of life. So I believe in ascension. That's not the goal of this. That's not my point. The point is that I've learned how to access guidance. And as we move into guidance, synchronicity, harmony, and order, which is a phrase I created many, many years ago, becomes far more evident. Flow becomes far more evident. And in flow, prosperity and guidance, prosperity and abundance are found. So you move out of the mind is where flow and prosperity and abundance and synchronicity, harmony, and order all show up. And that's the magic. And by the way, we document the daylights out of it as we go along.
Another interjection, if I may. I think when, not necessarily all people, but when some people hear about quieting the mind or going out of the mind, there may be an inclination to be fearful about that state, because we're so used to being in our minds and so used to trying to figure things out, trying to use the mind for things it was never intended to use. I would just invite the audience to, you know, to let go of that fear. To be more specific, you know, if God wanted to talk to you, would you listen? What if God's talking to you every moment and you haven't been listening?
There we go. That's probably more accurate.
What if the gentleman I'm talking to this morning has two technologies that will put you in touch with that conversation? Would that be worthy of your, would that be worthy of exploring? I would think so.
Well, so let me put it this way. Soaring affirmations, prosperity, and guidance light is a very gentle process, very gentle. You move with it at your own rate and speed. There's nothing, there's no wreckage left behind. Same thing with core resonance and neurofeedback. It's also a very gentle process because it doesn't rip anything open. There's no programming in this, and the mind subsides at its own rate and speed. And so you could almost say this is a, what's the best term? Trajectory isn't what I want, but it's the better analogy is when you do plant medicines or LSD or anything like that, that's abrupt. That's abrupt. And we all know most people have done LSD or the different plant medicines. Generally speaking, it's kind of an abrupt process. For a lot of us, it's fun, and I've done my fair share. The disadvantage, if you will, is that when it's over, you're not exactly positive where it's going to drop you off. And so there's a reorientation that goes on. And with core resonance and the soaring affirmation program, you have none of that. It's all very, very gentle. And I'd rather not say that technically you control it, but it's a very gentle process. And it can't, you don't lose control, because you do, you want to let go of control. So it's a gentle process. That's a long story short. So, and it's all about introspection, and we document what we do as we go along. So the whole thing is notes driven. Like when you do core resonance, the first thing you do when you come in, if you've been doing sessions, the first thing you do is document what you've discovered since your last session. That's the first thing. We're looking for newfound synchronicity in the arm. We're looking for evidence of this working. And so that becomes kind of like an affirmation. When you come in to do a session, again, you start with what you've discovered since your last session. And then before you start the individual protocol, because you do several protocols like an exercise, you identify how you feel before you do it. Then you identify how you feel afterward. So let's say you're doing core resonance and you're having really a rough experience, then, I mean, you'd be documenting that and clearly you wouldn't be going forward, but I don't have any of that. In fact, I've never even had anybody cry in tears doing core resonance. There's nothing raucous about it. Trauma dissipates with no more tension than a soap bubble popping. It's a very, very gentle process. I'm glad you brought it up as an idea, because it's an important, it's, you're not ripping anything open at all. There's no need to reorient after you complete this kind of thing at all. It's very gentle.
Let's suppose a member of our audience this morning is intrigued by what you've shared, Jim. What are his or her next steps to get going and have a personal experience of this process?
Well, core resonance is meant to be shared. It's designed now. I used to sell systems to individuals. And now it's really designed. It doesn't have to, doesn't take six people to use it, but it's designed to be owned and shared by six people in what's called a colony. But disregarding that, to learn more about core resonance, go to my website, Core Resonance. excuse me, coreresonance.com. And my whole website is oriented around core resonance. There's lots of videos. There's the video series, coreresonance.com/explanation, which is the colony we ran up to COVID, before and up to COVID, ran for about 6 months. A lot of interesting testimonials of people's experience. But at the same time, you can contact me for a Zoom call to talk about this on an individual basis. And I have to point out real quick is that core resonance has a second. So core resonance can rapidly bump consciousness, because as we quiet the nervous system, which is say quiet the brain, as resistance drops, consciousness goes up, because consciousness and resistance are inverse. As you move away from resistance, which is caused by overload, brain being on overload, and rigidity and reactionary posturing, again, all caused by a brain on overload. As the brain quiets down, we bump up the map of consciousness, and we can actually bump people, you know, towards 700 in not a very long period of time, a year. So in quieting the nervous system, our connection with source becomes enabled. As it becomes enabled, we become more blended with source. Now, just to touch real quick, there's something called Taproot by Core Resonance. And it's meant to be used by organizations, green, you know, companies that want their key people to become coherent, because that's what we're generating. We're causing people to move away from overload, plug into source, etc. But Taproot is actually about grounding coherence into the foundation of an organization. And that's way out in front. That's you take the six key figures of your company, core resonance is set up in your organization, and people go in and do sessions a couple times a week. I like to see three times. And it's astounding what can be achieved. And I'm available to talk to anybody by Zoom or email or by phone about this stuff. It's quite interesting.
Early in this call, you made a couple of observations I want to go back to. One was, you talked about a point in time where you felt you were totally present for a period of 3 weeks.
Right.
And then you also commented that having had that experience and other experiences similar to it, it placed you in a position to reverse engineer the technologies you've shared with us today.
That's
because
fair.
You knew where you wanted to support people in heading.
Right.
And I don't want that to, you know, go by the wayside, you know, in our discussion this morning. You've experienced personally presence and an alignment with the frequency of God. Are there things about that that you would like to, you know, share with the audience this morning? You know, more flesh on the bones, maybe?
Well, the other thing that occurs to me, and I'll make a remark that I've made once in a while. I claim to have spent 3 years in presence.
Oh, my.
I have no way to really, other than the documenting I was doing, when I was doing core resonance sessions, because I was doing a lot of core resonance at the time. And the curiosity is, I remember that time frame, instead of being in a mind-driven world of memories, I remember that time frame more as a reflection, like a reflection in a mirror. It's kind of hard to try to make any sense of, but and it's incidental, because that first time I was in presence, which was way before I had any of my own technologies, it was kind of a, it was hard. holding that open for 3 weeks. Again, I remember being on the freeway realizing in LA and I was in this different space, and I believe it lasted for 3 weeks. But what happens is, as you start moving into becoming more conscious, more flow shows up. And that's really the game we're after. We're not trying to rip a new hole in the universe and stick our head out and, see what God looks like. Not at all. What we're looking for is new levels of personal performance, new levels of synchronicity, harmony, and order, new levels of abundance and prosperity and flow. And it's just like everything is at our fingertips, and particularly after the fact, you can see all the nodal points or all the choices. And an example, I met up with you about a month ago in San Clemente, or in fact, it was September, no, August 20th, I think, because my event started on the 21st. But this is wild. So I'm in Encinitas for a neuroscience convention, conference, whatever. And I was going to go up to Santa Barbara because I had some technology to deliver to a client up there. And we had a storm coming in that was called, there was a hurricane. And supposedly Southern California had not had a hurricane in 40 or 50 years, and they're very uncommon. And so, and my hotel was quite expensive in Santa Barbara because I was expecting maybe to do, I say entertaining, possibly I was going to do some core residence, and I needed my a ratty Airbnb wouldn't have worked. But so I'd had quite a bit of expense being in Encinitas for 5 days. It was kind of unexpected before I hit Santa Barbara, and the hurricane came along, and I thought, I am not going to be driving between Encinitas through LA with hurricane type weather and mud slides and who knows what, and I'm not even a local. So I canceled my Santa Barbara hotel reservation at the last minute and decided that if we had a storm, and I've been in hurricanes before and around them, that I was going to stay in my hotel and go back to Arizona when I could. And I happen to know that with hurricanes traveling, the east side of the storm is the big side, the east side of the track. And so I was really kind of in a bind because to leave meant the biggest chunk of water and the biggest chunk of flooding was going to be on the east side of the track, which is my way back to Arizona. So I was kind of in a quandary how to deal with all this. And I was trying to be careful because, again, I'm not a local in Southern California. I even went and had a couple of cocktails, which is kind of common before a storm. In fact, it was raining pretty hard and the wind was blowing when I went into this place in Encinitas. I came out, it was blowing harder, and my shoes got wet getting to my car, and not a big deal. I even drove back the long way along Pacific Coast Highway and got up to my Oceanside. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, the storm was over. And by 3 o'clock, I realized the storm was over, and so I went back to sleep. Completely over it. It dissipated, or something happened. And in the morning, I decided I was going to renew my Santa Barbara because I had an important connection. I had important meetings up there. And so I'm in my hotel room. I find an Airbnb and on and on. I don't get out of my hotel room till 12:30 because this is a massive readjustment. I'm now going to go forward. So I drove through LA. I left my place in Encinitas at 12:30. I drove through LA. That's somewhere between 60 and 100 miles, depending on how you want to measure it. So I'm sure certainly across LA is 60 miles. No traffic. Why? Schools were closed that day. This was closed. That was closed. On and on, because a hurricane was supposed to come. So it's a funny thing that I would say that I had ultimately a whole bunch of advantages of a hurricane coming and dissipating, including no traffic driving across all of LA. And then ended up in an Airbnb that was far cheaper than my hotel, and ended up having a great. So the point is that synchronicity, harmony, and order will unfold if you will let it, even to the point of hurricanes showing up and then dissipating, so that all the traffic disappears in LA, so I can drive across town with no trouble. And curiously, at that same time, the hurricane's doing its thing. Oh, I had like five earthquakes, so. So the fun part is the whole thing becomes fun when you learn how to let go. I made decisions to cancel the plane up to Santa Barbara based on the weather. Weather disappeared. The expenses in Santa Barbara dropped immeasurably. They dropped over 1,000 in the hotel part of it. And met with my client and did what I was supposed to do and then drove home. So it's kind of a funny deal, but the hurricane dissipating the traffic driving through LA in the middle of the day was fun. Just a little thing.
Before we close out this segment, would you care to make a comment or two on the statement, allowing to do the heavy lifting, which I got very clearly listening to you describe your Encinitas LA experience?
Well, out of the sort, so that's the most recent development. It's called Choice Points. And the subtitle might be Choice Points Allowing to Do Life's Heavy Lifting. In fact, I just did put a newsletter out on that a couple, 3 weeks ago. It's easy to find on my website. Choice Points are interesting. And again, this came to me. It's a technology. And the idea is that in every moment, we are making choices whether we're aware of it or not. And in fact, just doing the same thing over again, over and over again, embracing the same thing over and over again is actually full of mini choices. I even came up with a new term, micro choices, but they become automated. And what happens is every time you have an opportunity to catch up with yourself, make a choice point toward more coherence. Make a choice point toward no more coherence. You're not deciding what coherence looks like, because who the hell are you to decide what your end result looks like? The idea is to make choices toward more coherence and let that guidance unfold its own version of what's what. And so you're precisely right, because the choice points is a very powerful, a very simple concept. And choice points runs really strong in my arena these days. And when I discovered it and started using it, it really kicked in really fast. And the other aspect of that is in our field, all of us have things where we have dissonant activities and we have dissonant relationships and we have dissonant organizations that maybe we support, hoping or intending to contribute to that organization not being so dissonant. And what I say is drop it. Drop it, drop it, drop it, make choices toward more coherence, because you can be far more useful to the whole instead of nursing something that's dissonant. And I know everybody's not going to agree, and that's fine, because there will always be people to help people that can't help themselves. But I'll tell you what, as we learn to understand our nature, as we learn to understand guidance, as we learn to understand how prosperity and abundance works, which is not about money, it's about things being at your fingertips as you move forward. As you make choices toward more coherence, you ultimately become more useful to others. And so we got to find a new way to become useful. And in fact, I dropped two things here in Arizona, an organization I've actually done some speaking at, and I decided they were a dissonant group. I dropped that and I dropped something else. And that's how the Santa Barbara thing showed up. This was 2, 3, 4 months ago. And because we all have a full plate, and if we let dissonance go, dissonant organizations and dissonant activities that otherwise we inadvertently embrace because we continue to feed them, and instead make choices toward more coherence, our life will improve quite a bit. So the choice points goes with the Soaring Affirmations program. Of course, it would go with the core resonance and the taproot thing, but it's one of those little things that that's come along with me exploring flow and prosperity and abundance, and concepts come in. And luckily, I've been writing this stuff down, starting with that journaling that was from the year probably 1998 to the year 2000. And then Visionaries Thrive in All Times took off. And now I've got 180 articles and 5 books, and I keep documenting flow and synchronicity, harmony, and order, and teach access to it.